17. The Hollow Sea. Oh, whence do you come, my dear friend, to me, with your golden hair all fallen below your knee, and your face as white as snowdrops on the lea, and your voice as hollow as the hollow sea? From the other world I come back to you. My locks are uncurled with dripping, drenching dew. You know the old, whilst I know the new. But tomorrow you shall know this too. Christina Rossetti, The Poor Ghost. So, said Will Herondale, a dark edge to his voice, for some reason you thought it was a good idea to take on Amanda Cordemon all by yourselves. Lucy's eyes fluttered open. For a moment she thought her father was talking to her and considered flight. She discarded the idea immediately. Her body was pinned down by heavy sheets and blankets. She blinked at her familiar surroundings. Somehow she had been tucked into her own bed at home. The room smelled comfortingly of tea and of her father's cologne. Not surprisingly, as he was seated in a chair next to the bed. Her mother had her hand on Will's shoulder, and James leaned against a wall nearby. He clearly hadn't changed clothes since the fight on the bridge, though his hands and face had been cleaned of blood and ichor, and a new healing rune gleamed against his throat. Someone had laid the golden blade of Cortana across Lucy's vanity table. She supposed there had been no chance to return it to Cordelia after her recovery from the river. Christopher was using one of his new devices, James lied. It's meant to pick up the traces of dark magic. We didn't think it would really come to anything. That is why we didn't summon you. Will's eyebrows flew up. All six of you showed up to Tower Bridge in gear, despite thinking it wouldn't come to anything. Lucy squeezed her eyes half shut. Better by far that they think she was asleep. James could definitely handle this on his own. As he never tired of reminding her, he was older. We thought it best to be prepared, said James. Besides, I know you did much more risky things when you were my age. It's dreadful the way you keep throwing that in my face, said Will. Well, I think they did very well, said Tessa. Amanda Cordemon is not easy to defeat. And we did not defeat it, James said grimly. There will continue to be attacks. The Nephilim are still in danger. Darling, the responsibility does not lie on you to fix all this, said Tessa, her voice gentle. Just to know the demon is in fact a Mandacor will help a great deal. Yes, and you should tell Christopher that the Clave wishes to use this new device of his. It seems as if it could be very useful, said Will. Ah, said James. Tragically, the device was eaten by the demon. Unable to help herself, Lucy giggled. You're awake! Tessa rushed to the bed and hugged her daughter furiously. Oh, Lucy! Will rose and hugged her as well. For a moment, Lucy let herself enjoy being surrounded by the love and attention of her parents, even as she could hear Will scolding her for running out onto the riverbank alone. But I did it for Cordelia, she exclaimed, as her parents drew back, her mother seating herself on the bed beside Lucy, where she could hold her hand. You would have done it for Jem, Papa, when you were Parabatai. Will leaned back against a post of the bed. You aren't Parabatai with Cordelia yet. It isn't just for boys to risk their lives for each other, Lucy said fiercely. I had to call for help. Yes, and thank the angel one of the passing boatmen saw Cordelia and brought her to shore, said Tessa. You did help save her, Lucy. Lucy glanced at James. She knew he had not seen the ghosts who had taken Cordelia from the water. Even Magnus had been too far away to glimpse them. Nevertheless, he looked thoughtful. Cordelia was quite all right once she coughed up the river water, he said reassuringly. Matthew, Christopher, and Thomas took her home in a hansom cab. But Cortana is still here, Lucy said, indicating the shining blade. Daisy will be miserable without it. It's more than just a sword to her. She started to struggle upright. I must bring it to her immediately. Lucy, no, said Tessa. You need to rest. I will bring it to Kensington, said James. There was a distant look in his eyes. I wish to check on Cordelia and make sure she is recovering from the river. Tessa still looked worried. Take the carriage, James, please, she said. It will be safer. Nephilim carriages were reinforced with demon-repelling electrum and runes cleverly woven throughout the wood. James sighed and nodded. And take Bridget and her massive spear, said Will, doing a poor job at hiding a smile. And perhaps change out of your gear first. It never hurts to look your best for a social call. If only there had been a rune for drying clothes, Cordelia thought mournfully. She felt as if she were definitely squelching. She was pressed up against Matthew in the back of the hansom cab on a bench seat that faced Thomas and Christopher. Matthew had kindly thrown his gear jacket over her shoulders since her own was wet. He was in shirt sleeves, one arm around her, holding her steady. It was an odd but not unpleasant feeling. It was still all something of a blur. She recalled the force with which the demon's paw had struck her, the feeling of weightlessness as her feet left the bridge. The moon turning upside down and the river rushing up with horrifying speed. Bitter, black water, the smell of damp and rot, the struggle to free herself from what she thought now might have been river weeds. Her first clear memory was of James leaning down over her with a steely in one hand and Cortana in the other. She had been choking and gasping, her body convulsing as her lungs emptied of water. James had drawn Eratzi after Eratzi onto her arm as the merry thieves crowded around. At some point Matthew had arrived to take over while James hurried to Lucy, who had fainted on the riverbank. Magnus was there too, reassuring them that Lucy was fine and suffering from nothing more than shock. The shining bridge Magnus had summoned had vanished, and traffic had resumed over the real Tower Bridge, so it'd been easy for him to get hold of two hansom cabs and firmly separate the group. Lucy and James to go to the Institute, and the remaining merry thieves to accompany Cordelia to Kensington. He had also told James, in no uncertain terms, that if James didn't pass on the information to Will and Tessa that the demon responsible for the attacks was a Mandacor, he would do it himself. Cordelia had managed to squeeze Lucy's hand once before she and James had been bundled into their hansom and driven away. Cordelia found herself on her way home, shivering with cold, her damp hair clammy with river water. Are you sure you're all right? Thomas inquired, not for the first time. He sat opposite Cordelia, his knees knocking into hers. People Thomas's size were not made for ordinary hansom cabs. I'm fine, Cordelia insisted. Utterly fine. It was amazing the way you charged at that demon. Absolutely capital, said Christopher. I really thought you had it in your sights. Until you fell into the river, that is. Cordelia felt Matthew's shoulders shake with silent laughter. Yes, said Cordelia. I was under the same misapprehension myself. What happened exactly? Thomas said. How did Lucy get you out of the water? Startled, Cordelia furrowed her brow. I don't know, she said slowly. I don't understand it. I did hear Lucy calling my name, and then I just woke up on the bank, coughing. The current could have just brought her ashore, said Christopher. Thames currents can be quite strong. Matthew looked at her curiously. When we were on the bridge, when James was fighting the Mandacor, it looked as if the demon was speaking to him. Did you hear it? Cordelia hesitated. She thought, come with me, child of demons, to where you will be honoured. You see the same world I do. You see the world as it really is. I know who your mother is, and who your grandfather is. Come with me.
No,
she said, just sort of a growling noise, not any words. The cab came to a stop. They had arrived at the Kensington house, gleaming white in the moonlight. The street was quiet and peaceful, a low wind rustling the tops of the plane trees. Cordelia wasn't exactly sure how it happened, but Thomas and Christopher wound up waiting in the cab as Matthew escorted her to her front door, past the black and gold railing that circled the gardens.
"Will your mother be angry?" Matthew said.
"Have you heard of the death of 1,000 cuts? Cordelia replied.
"I always preferred the death of 1,000 cats, in which one is buried under kittens," said Matthew.
Cordelia laughed. They had reached the glossy black front door. She began to remove Matthew's jacket to return it to him. He held up a slender hand, scarred as all Shadow Hunters' hands were scarred. She could see his Parabatai rune printed darkly on the inside of his wrist.
"Keep it," he said. "I have at least 17, and this is the plainest."
17 coats. He was ridiculous. He was also rich, Cordelia realized. Of course he was. His mother had been consul longer than they had been alive. His clothes were always a bit outrageous, but they were also expensive-looking and finely made. There was a silk flower, dyed green and secured in the buttonhole of his shirt. She touched the petal lightly with a fingertip.
"What does this mean?"
"The green carnation symbolizes a love of art and artifice, since a green carnation has to be created rather than appearing in nature." Matthew hesitated. "It also celebrates loving anyone you choose, whether that is a man or a woman."
"A man or a woman?"
She looked at Matthew in surprise for a moment. Was he like Alistair? But no, she thought. It seemed to her that Alistair preferred only men romantically, as he had said he would never deceive a woman by pretending he loved her. Matthew was clearly saying he liked women and men both. Matthew was looking at her hesitantly, as if he could not puzzle out her response, or perhaps thought she might be angry. She thought of the hurt look in Alistair's eyes when he'd realized she had spied on him. She thought of the secrets people kept and the way they were like scars or wounds beneath the skin. You could not always see them, but if you touched on them in the wrong way, you could cause great pain.
"I like that," she said. "And I am sure anyone you chose to be in your life, whether it was a man or a woman, would be a good person who I would like very much."
"I wouldn't be so sure of me, Cordelia," Matthew said, "or my choices."
"Matthew," she said, "what could you ever have done that would be so bad?"
He set one hand on the doorframe, above her head, and gazed down at her. The faint glow from the street lamps illuminated the high arches of Matthew's cheekbones and the soft, disarranged fall of his hair.
"You wouldn't believe me if I told you."
"I believe James would not have chosen you as a Parabatai if there was anything so terrible about you." He closed his eyes for a moment, as if he felt a flash of pain. When he opened them, he was smiling, though it did not reach his eyes.
"You have been quite a surprise since you came into our lives," he said, and she knew by "our" he meant the five of them, the Merry Thieves and Lucy. "I did not feel that our little group was missing anything before you arrived, but now that you are here, I cannot imagine it without you."
Before Cordelia could respond, the door opened and Risa was there. She took one astonished look at Cordelia, then called over her shoulder for Sonar. Cordelia's mother appeared, wrapped in a silk robe de chambre. She looked from Matthew to Cordelia, dripping water on the front steps, and her dark eyes widened.
"Oh,"
she said, her voice carrying that mixture of disapproval and concern that only a mother's could.
"Oh, Leila, what happened?"
If Cordelia had expected her mother to be angry, she was pleasantly surprised. Like a master artisan of falsehoods, Matthew spun a story for Sonar of bravery, intrigue, danger, and hinted romance.
Cordelia had been at the Institute, he claimed, and would have remained loyally by James's side, for he was suffering the loss of Barbara with great sorrow, but knew her mother would worry if she did not return home. Matthew had offered to escort her, but they had been set upon by demons on the Thames footpath. Cordelia had fought bravely, but was knocked into the river. It had all been very dramatic. Sonar forced a bar of Fry's chocolate cream and a thick scarf on Matthew before he was able to make his escape. She then went for Cordelia with an icy will, making sure she stripped off her wet clothes and that Risa drew a hot bath for her. No sooner had Cordelia exited the bath and put on a nightgown and slippers than she found herself reclining on the couch in the library in front of a roaring fire. A cosy dressing gown was wrapped around her shoulders, and Risa placed a fresh cup of tea in her hands while shaking her head with a disapproving air. Cordelia had never been so hot in her life. Sonar perched on the arm of the sofa. Cordelia watched her mother warily over the edge of her teacup, fairly sure that Sonar was settling in for a lengthy scold. Instead, her dark eyes were worried. "Cordelia," she said, "where is Cortana?" Cordelia started. She knew when she had last seen Cortana, in James's hand by the riverbank, but in the ensuing chaos she had forgotten to take it back from him before she climbed into the carriage Magnus had summoned. I don't want you to be worried, Cordelia June Delam," said Sonar. "I know how your father has always made you feel about that sword, that it was a greater part of the Carstairs' destiny than you, than I believe it is." Cordelia stared. This was the closest she'd seen her mother come to criticizing Elias. "A weapon can be lost during a battle. It is always better to lose the weapon than the warrior." "Mada," Cordelia began, struggling up against the mass of pillows, "it is not what you think." A knock sounded at the door. A moment later, Risa stepped back into the library, James in tow. He had changed out of the filthy gear he'd been wearing on the bridge and wore a dark Chesterfield coat, its velvet collar turned up against the wind outside. He was carrying Cortana carefully, the gold bright and sharp against the dark tweed of his clothes. Risa dusted off her hands with a satisfied air and headed for the kitchen. Sonar was beaming all over her face. "Cordelia, James has brought you back Cortana." Cordelia was speechless. She had certainly expected to get Cortana back, but not for James to show up in Cornwall Gardens after midnight. "I will leave you alone to talk," said Sonar, and left the room, closing the door behind her. Cordelia was a little shocked. If Sonar was willing to leave her daughter alone with James, while Cordelia was wearing her night attire, she must be very convinced of James's marital intentions. Oh dear. Setting her teacup down on the low table beside the sofa, Cordelia lifted her head to look at James. His deep gold eyes were startling in their intensity. There were several bruises on his skin, and his hair was damp, probably from being recently washed. The quiet seemed to stretch out between them. Maybe neither of them would ever speak again. "Did you tell your parents," asked Cordelia, "about the Mandacor and what happened on the bridge?" "Most of it," James said. "Not about the Pixis, of course, or Agaliarept, or... well, really, I left most of what we've done lately out of it. They do know the Mandacor is responsible for the attacks now, and that's the important part." Cordelia wondered for a moment if he had told them what the Mandacor had said to him on the bridge. Child of demons. It was the second time she had heard a demon taunt him about his heritage. It was the way of greater demons, to find the weak spots in humans and pierce them. She hoped James was able to dismiss their words, to see that he was no more a child of demons than Lucy or Tessa or Magnus Bane. "Thank you," James said, making her start, "for what you did on the bridge. That was exceedingly brave." "Which part?" His smile flashed like heat lightning, transforming his face. "That's true. You did quite a lot of brave things on the bridge.
That's not what I... She began to sputter, then reached up as he held Cortana out to her. It was lovely to have it in her arms again.
Cortana, moosh moosh arm, she said. I'm glad you're back.
Did you just use a term of endearment for your sword? Said James. He had looked exhausted when he'd come into the room, but he seemed greatly cheered up now.
It means mouse, and yes, it is a term of endearment. Cortana has been with me through many difficult times. It should be appreciated.
She leaned the sword against the fireplace grate. The heat would not tarnish the blade. Nothing did. I wish I knew more Persian, said James. He sank into one of the armchairs. I would like to thank you in it, Daisy, for saving my life and risking your own. And for helping us as you have, especially when no one you know is ill. You could have all fled back to Paris or Sirenworth the moment this started. Cordelia had often dreamed of teaching James Persian herself. English endearments were so limited and bland in comparison, she had always thought. Persians thought nothing of telling someone they loved Fadat Besham, I would die for you, or calling that person Nora Chasemam, the light of my eyes, or Delbaram, the thief of my heart. She thought suddenly of the sparking fire in the whispering room and the smell of roses. She bit her lower lip.
You should not thank me, she said, or treat me as though I am being entirely unselfish.
James raised his winging black eyebrows. What do you mean?
I have my own reasons for involving myself in the search for a cure. Of course, I want to help those who are sick, but I also cannot help believing that if I were able to do such a service to the Clave as aiding in ending this demonic disease, surely they would grant my father leniency in his trial.
I wouldn't call that selfish, said James. What you are talking about is undertaking to do good for the sake of your father and your family. Cordelia smiled weakly.
Well, I'm sure you'll add that to the list of my many qualities when you are helping me find a husband.
James did not smile back. Daisy, he said, I do not think that I... He cleared his throat. Perhaps after what happened in the whispering room, I am not the right person to find you a husband. I can't imagine you would trust me to...
I do trust you, Cordelia spoke through numb lips. I entirely understand. You did not take liberties, James. It was a pretense. It was false, I know.
False, he echoed. Despite the heat, Cordelia shivered as James rose to his feet. The firelight flickered through his hair, edging the black locks with scarlet, as if he wore a crown of flames. I kissed you because I wanted to, he said, because I'd never wanted anything so much. Cordelia felt herself go scarlet. I am no longer bound to Grace, he went on, yet for so many years I loved her. I know, I remember that I did. That love ruled my life. Cordelia's fingers tightened on her dressing gown. I wonder sometimes now if it was a dream, James said. I idealized her, I suppose, as children do. Perhaps it was a child's dream of what love should and must be. I believed love was pain, and when I bled for her.
It need not be pain, Cordelia whispered. But James, if you love Grace...
I don't know, James said, turning away from the fire. His eyes were dark, as they had been in the whispering room, and desperate. How can I have loved her so much and feel what I feel now for... He broke off. Maybe I am not who I thought I was.
James.
The pain in his voice was too much. She started to rise to her feet. No. He shook his head, voice rough. Don't. If you come to me, Daisy, I will want... The library door flew open. Cordelia looked up, expecting to see her mother. But it was Alistair, fully dressed for the outside in boots and an Inverness cape. He slammed the door behind him and turned to face them both, his gaze raking Cordelia and then James. "My mother said you were both in here," he said in the drawl that meant he was out of his mind with rage. Cordelia's heart sank. The last time she had seen Alistair, he had been furious. He seemed still furious. She wondered if he had ever stopped being furious, or if he had been in a temper all day. "I didn't credit it at first, but now I see it is true." His black gaze snapped to James. "She may feel that it is permissible to leave you alone with my sister, but I don't. You brought her home in the dead of night, injured and looking like a drowned rat." James crossed his arms over his chest. His eyes were golden slits. "Actually, Matthew brought her back. I've only just arrived." Alistair shrugged off his heavy coat and threw it angrily over the arm of a chair. "I thought you had better sense, Herondale, than to put yourself in a position to compromise my sister."
"He brought back Cortana," Cordelia protested.
"Your mother welcomed me into this room," said James, his expression like ice. "Hers is the authority here, not yours." "My mother doesn't understand." Alistair broke off. He was yanking at the gloves on his hands with shaking fingers, and Cordelia realized with a shock that Alistair was far more upset than she'd realized. "I know you hate me for how I treated you in school, and rightfully so," Alistair said, fixing James with a level gaze. "But however much you hate me, do not take it out on my sister." Cordelia saw a flicker of surprise in James's eyes. "Alistair, you made my life a living hell at the academy, but I'd never take it out on Cordelia. That's something you would do, not something I would do." "I see how it is. In school, I had the power, and here, you have the power to lord it over me. What's your game? What do you want with my sister?" "Your sister," James said, speaking with a slow, deliberate coldness. "Your sister is the only thing keeping me from punching you in the face. Your sister loves you, Angel knows why, and you aren't even in the least bit grateful." Alistair's voice was hoarse. "You have no idea what I've done for my sister. You have no idea about our family. You don't know the first thing." He broke off and glowered. It was as if a jolt went through Cordelia. She had always thought of their family as fairly ordinary, aside from their constant travel. What was Alistair hinting at? "James," she said. The air was crackling with violence. It was only a matter of time before one of the boys took a swing at the other. "James, you'd better go." James turned to her. "Are you sure?" he said in a low voice. "I won't leave you alone, Cordelia. Not unless you wish me to."
"I'll be fine," she whispered back. "Alistair's bark is worse than his bite. I promise."
He raised his hand, as if he meant to cup her cheek or brush back a lock of her hair. She could feel the energy between them, even now, even with her brother 3 feet away and mad with rage. It felt like the sparks of a bonfire. James dropped his hand, and with a last hard look at Alistair, strode from the room. Cordelia went immediately to the door, shut and locked it. She turned to face him.
"What did you mean," she said, "by you have no idea what I've done for my sister?"
"Nothing," Alistair said, picking up his gloves. "I meant nothing, Cordelia."
"Yes, you did," she said. "I can tell that there is something you're not telling me. Something that has to do with father. All this time you have acted like my attempts to save him, to save us, are childish and silly. You haven't stood up for him at all. What are you not telling me?"
Alistair squeezed his eyes shut. "Please stop asking." "I won't," Cordelia said.
"You think father did something wrong, don't you?"
The gloves Alistair had been holding fell to the floor.
It doesn't matter what I think, Cordelia.
It does matter, Cordelia said. It matters when you hide things from me, you and Maman. I got a letter from the consul. It said that they couldn't try Father with the mortal sword because he didn't remember a thing about the expedition. How could that be? What did he do?
He was drunk, Alistair said. The night of the expedition, he was drunk. So drunk, he probably sent those poor bastards into a nest of vampires because he didn't know enough not to. So drunk, he doesn't remember a thing, because he's always bloody drunk, Cordelia. The only one of us who didn't know that is you.
Cordelia sank down on the couch. She no longer felt her legs could hold her up.
Why didn't you tell me?
She whispered.
Because I never wanted you to know, Alistair burst out. Because I wanted you to have a childhood, a thing I never had. I wanted you to be able to love and respect your father as I never could. Every time he made a mess, who do you think had to clean it up? Who told you Father was ill or sleeping when he was drunk? Who went out and fetched him when he passed out in a gin palace and smuggled him in through the back door? Who learned at 10 years old to refill the brandy bottles with water each morning so no one would notice the levels had sunk?
He broke off, breathing hard.
Alistair,
Cordelia whispered. It was all true, she knew. She could not help but recall Father lying day after day in a darkened room, her mother saying he was sick. Elias's hands shaking. Wine ceasing to appear at the dinner table. Elias never eating. Cordelia coming across bottles of brandy in odd places. A hall closet, a trunk of linens. Alistair never acknowledging any of it, laughing it off, turning her attention in some other direction, always, so she did not dwell, so she would not have to.
He will never win this trial, said Alistair.
He was trembling. Even though the mortal sword is useless, he will indict himself with the way he looks, the way he speaks. The Clave knows a drunk when they see one. That is why Mother wants you married quickly, so you'll be safe when the shame of it comes down.
But what of you? Said Cordelia. No shame should accrue to you either. Father's weakness is not your weakness.
The fire in the grate had nearly burned down. Alistair's eyes were luminous in the dark.
I have my own weaknesses, as you well know.
Love is not a weakness, Alistair Dadash, she said.
And for a moment, she saw Alistair hesitate at the use of the Persian word. Then his mouth tightened. The shadows under his eyes looked like bruises. She wondered where he had been, to return so late at night.
Isn't it? He said, turning to leave the room. Don't give your heart to James Herondale, Cordelia. He is in love with Grace Blackthorn, and he always will be.
You should brush your hair,
Jessamine said, pushing the silver-backed hairbrush along the nightstand toward Lucy.
It will get tangled. Why must you be such a fussy ghost?
Said Lucy, scooting upright against the pillows. She had been firmly ordered to stay in bed, though she was itching to leap up, seize her pen and write. What was the point of having exciting things happen to you if you couldn't tell a story about them?
When I was a girl, I brushed my hair 100 strokes a day, said Jessamine,
who, being a ghost, had hair that floated like fine gossamer, and never needed brushing.
Why, I...
She shrieked and shot up into the air, hovering a foot above the nightstand. A wash of cold went over Lucy. She pulled the blankets up around her, looking about the room anxiously.
Jesse?
He materialized at the foot of the bed, in the same black trousers and shirt sleeves he always wore. His eyes were green and very serious. I am here. Lucy looked up at Jessamine.
Could I have a moment to speak with Jesse alone? Alone?
Jessamine looked horrified.
But he's a gentleman. In your bedroom.
I am a ghost, said Jessie dryly. What is it exactly you imagine I might do?
Please, Jessamine, said Lucy.
Jessamine sniffed.
Never in my day,
she announced, and vanished in a swirl of petticoats.
Why are you here?
Lucy said, hugging the blankets to her chest. It was true that Jessie was a ghost, but she still felt awkward about the idea of him seeing her in her nightgown.
I don't remember you leaving, at the bridge.
Your brother and friends seem to have the situation well in hand, Jessie said. His gold locket glimmered at his throat. And your brother can see ghosts. He's never seen me before, but...
Huh, Lucy said. You do realize I just had to be dishonest with my family and pretend as if I didn't know you existed or that you raised the dead to bring Cordelia out of the river.
What?
I mean, I'm grateful that you did. Brought Cordelia out of the river, I mean. Don't think I'm not. It's just...
You think I called the dead out of the river? Jessie demanded. I answered the call. Despite the blanket, Lucy suddenly felt cold all over.
What do you mean?
You called the dead, said Jessie. You called the dead, and the dead came. I heard you, across the whole city, calling for someone to help you.
What do you mean? Why would I have any ability to call the dead up? I can see them, but I certainly can't command.
She broke off. She was suddenly back in Emmanuel Garst's bedroom in that small, terrible flat. You will, she had said when the ghost proclaimed he would never tell, and he had given up his secrets. Leave us, she had said, and he had winked out of existence. You were the only one who could see me in the ballroom, said Jessie. You have always been the only one who could see me besides my family. There's something unusual about you. She stared at him. What if she ordered Jessie to do something? Would he have to do it? Would he have come to her if she called, as he had on the riverbank? She swallowed.
When we were beside the river, when you were with me, you were holding that locket at your throat, clutching it.
And you want me to tell you why, he said, and she knew he'd had the same thought she had. She didn't like the thought. She didn't want to order him around, or Jessamine. Perhaps she had to be panicked, though, she told herself. She'd been frightened in Garst's flat, and again at the river.
If you want to, she said.
This locket was placed around my throat by my mother, he said. It contains my last breath.
Your last breath?
I ought to tell you how I died, I suppose, he said, perching himself on the windowsill. He seemed to like it there, Lucy thought, just on the threshold. I was a sickly child. My mother told the Silent Brothers that I wasn't well enough to withstand being given runes, but I begged and begged. She managed to fight me off until I was 17. You might understand that by then I was desperate to be a shadow hunter, like other shadow hunters. I told her that if she did not let me get the marks, I would run away to Alicante and get them myself.
And did you? Run away?
He shook his head. My mother relented, and the Silent Brothers came to the manor house. The rune ceremony went off without a hitch, and I thought I had triumphed. He held up his right hand, and she realized what she had thought was a scar was the faint outline of the Voyance rune. My first rune, and my last.
What happened?
When I returned to my room, I collapsed on my bed. Then I woke in the night, burning with fever. I remember screaming, and Grace running into my room. She was half hysterical. Blood was welling from my skin, turning the sheets to scarlet. I writhed and screamed and tore at the bedspread, but I was weakening, nor could they use healing runes on me. I remember realizing I was dying. I had become so weak. Grace held me as I shivered. She was barefoot, and her nightgown and wrapper were soaked with my blood. I remember my mother coming in. She held the locket to my lips, as if she meant me to kiss it,
Did you?
Lucy whispered. No, said Jessie matter-of-factly. I died. For the first time in her life, Lucy felt a pang of pity for Grace. To have her brother die in her arms like that, she could not imagine the agony. I came slowly to understand I was a ghost after that, said Jessie, and it took me months of trying before my mother and sister could hear me and speak to me. Even then, I disappeared every morning when the sun came up, and only came back to consciousness with evening. I spent many nights walking alone in Brosland Forest, with only the dead to see me. And you, a little girl who'd fallen into a fairy trap. Lucy blushed. I was surprised when you saw me, he said, and even more when I was able to touch your hand and lift you out of that pit. I thought perhaps it was because you were so young, but no. There is something unusual about you, Lucy. You have a power that is tied to the dead. Lucy sighed. If only I could have a power that was tied to bread and butter pudding. That would not have helped Cordelia last night, Jessie said. He let his head fall back against the window pane, and Lucy saw that, of course, he was not reflected in the dark glass. My mother believes that once everything is in order, and she has all the ingredients a warlock will need, the last breath in this locket can be used to resurrect me. But on the riverbank, I was holding it because... Lucy raised her eyebrows. I thought at first you might have been in the water, drowning. The life force in the locket could have emptied your lungs and let you breathe. He hesitated. I thought, if you were dying, I would use it to bring you back. Lucy inhaled sharply. You would do that? For me? His eyes were fathomless deep green, the way Lucy imagined the depth of the ocean. His lips parted as if he meant to answer, just as a shaft of dawn light pierced the window glass. He stiffened, his eyes still locked on hers, as if he had been shot through with an arrow. Jessie, she whispered, but he had already vanished.